Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Best Flow in the Show podcast. I'm your host, Mason Webster. On today's episode, I'll be covering the Edmonton Oilers and announcing their candidate for the Best Flow in the Show contest. Now remember guys, there's only one Best Flow in the Show, so go on Instagram and Twitter at Best Flow in the Show and vote for each team's candidate for the contest, or at least your favorite team's candidate. Go out there and show your guys some support. There will be an eventual winner to this contest, so keep up with the voting. And we are dead set right in the thick of the quarantine, so you guys do not have anything better to do. Speaking of the quarantine, I want to know how you guys are getting through these difficult times and no hockey times. For me, my house is super busy and there's lots going on, so it's really difficult for me to find some quiet time. In fact, I just got interrupted. It's almost impossible to actually get through a podcast, so I gotta be honest though, the biggest impact this quarantine has had on me is the lack of hockey. Now, I know I'm really lucky to be able to say that, but 7 o'clock just doesn't quite feel the same anymore, and I can't play hockey, I can't watch hockey. Even my phone doesn't really feel the same because all I'm doing is looking up shit about hockey. I've even thrown on the inline blades a couple times to try to cope, but I'm tired of deking out the dogs. So here we are, the Edmonton Oilers. Overall, they had a great season. They had the most points that they've had in the last 3 years. They started out with a new GM, Ken Holland, and a new coach behind the bench, Dave Tippett. The Oilers are obviously playing a lot better defensively now, thanks to the new scheme that Dave Tippett brought in, and that really suits the kind of depth that they have at forward. They don't really have a lot of offensive depth, and a much more defensive scheme makes it easier to play mistake-free hockey and play within the scheme that the coach has put out for you. There's less opportunity for mistakes, so it's really suited this Oilers team that has high-flying offense and then kind of a drop-off after that point. So the change was much needed that Dave Tippett brought in, and he had a huge turnaround. The biggest turnaround, I'd have to say, is in the special teams. They had the number one power play in the league, and they were the number two penalty killers in the league. To me, if your special teams are good, that really kind of spells out what kind of team you are, because usually the teams that are at least top five in the league in one or the other category are the top teams in the league. And the fact that Edmonton is in the top two of both special teams categories really says that they're a much improved team, and they're a team that should be considered really deadly when it comes to playoff time, because they might take some penalties, but they're going to kill them. And if you take penalties, they're probably going to score on you. So that's something to keep an eye out for. But overall, the Oilers had a really good season. The change of coach made a huge difference and really provided some stability and security for these guys. As for Ken Holland, the new GM, he's providing some much-needed stability in the front office. The Oilers have been through some crap in the past. The last GM didn't exactly do the greatest job, and so he was chased out. That's Peter Chiarelli. So far, he's made a couple good moves. It's a little too soon to tell if he's going to be the GM that the Oilers need, but I think that he's made good progress and he's already improved the team's depth going forward. So I think this Oilers team has improved so much in the past couple of years, just in terms of growth in the organization and becoming more of a deep team. And it's probably the best Oilers team that we've seen in at least 10 years. Like, how long has it been since the Pronger team that made it to the Stanley Cup final? I would say this is probably the best team. Anyway, we're going to take a look at the forward lines. First line is Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, McDavid, and Cassian. Now, the Oilers bounce around their line pairings quite a bit because Nugent-Hopkins is a centerman, and it doesn't really make sense to have three of your best players playing on separate lines, so sometimes they got to stack them up. And right now they got Nugent-Hopkins on the first line with McDavid and Cassian. So Nugent-Hopkins had a great season, put up 61 points in 65 games, and I'd call him one of the top two-way centers in the game, I think, at this point in his career when he is playing center. He's a Selke candidate going forward into the future. He's really good defensively. He's really honed his game and developed into a guy that you can trust in the defensive zone, and that's something that a lot of high-skilled guys can't really say that they can do. As for McDavid, he put up the perfect number this year, 97 points. If the season comes back, I'm sure he'll break that. And as I'm sure most of you know, he was voted the best player once again this year by his peers in the NHL. He took 37% of the voting, which is just crazy. But what are you going to do? It's Connor McDavid. He's the best player in the world, and there's no doubt about it. And the fact that he did this year after coming off a scary knee injury that nobody really knew about, and then he had a secret documentary team chasing him around. Like, that is crazy to see the kind of journey that he had to go through and the procedures that they were talking about doing, possibly career ending, and then he goes and rehabs everything. So it's awesome to see him come back and possibly stronger than ever. I know sometimes when you get a knee injury like that, if it's repaired properly and rehabbed properly, it can come back stronger. So hopefully that's the case for McDavid. As for Zach Cassian, he put up 34 points this year. Got a nice little contract upgrade, a four-year deal for $3.2 million. I mean, what else can I say about Cassian? He has made himself a top priority in Edmonton. He is their entirety of the grit and physicality on this team is encompassed through Cassian. He can play on the top line. He's just scraping by with enough skill to play on the top line. And with Lucic gone now, he's the top enforcer on the team. So he's got a big role to play. And the run-in he had with Tkachuk this year was really exciting. It brought a lot of excitement to the Battle of Alberta. Tkachuk did crank him with a couple of very on-the-edge hits. It was looking to possibly hurt somebody. But what are you going to do? I think Cassian handled it very maturely for the most part, other than calling him a pussy in the media. But yeah, I don't know. Cassian and Tkachuk are going to be a great rivalry going forward. Jump to the second line. We got Kyler Yamamoto, Leon Draisaitl, and Tyler Ennis. Kyler Yamamoto had a huge breakout season this year. He put up 26 points in 27 games. And I think he's going to be a top player for Edmonton for a long time. There are so many points to be had playing with McDavid and Draisaitl. Like, he can easily be a point of game guy going forward. And he's got a contract coming up soon, so we'll talk about that a little bit later. As for Leon Draisaitl, he put up 110 points this year, 13 better than McDavid, who is holding down second place. So he's run away with the Hart Trophy. He's probably going to get the MVP. He had just a lights out season. I don't know what else to say. The guy is a stud. McDavid was voted the best player by his peers, but if things keep going the way they are, Draisaitl might be right there in that voting, because I don't know. The Oilers have the best 1-2 punch in the whole NHL. It reminds me of the good old Gretzky-Messier days before I was born. And yeah, it's exciting to see what these guys are going to accomplish. Dynasty type stuff. And then the last guy on that line is Tyler Ennis. He had a great year. He put up 37 points between Ottawa and Edmonton this year. I think he should stay. He's a pending unrestricted free agent, but like I said with Kyler Yamamoto, there's a ton of points to be had here in Edmonton. And for a guy like Ennis, who is a small, skilled forward, he has a ton of potential with this team. So I think it would be the best move for his career to stay in a place where they want you. You can come back, maybe play for $1 million, get a huge amount of points 1 year, and then get your career-ending ticket. I think Ennis is almost 30, so he's probably looking for that escape plan ticket soon. We'll jump to the third line. Got Andreas Athanasiou, Riley Shahan, and Josh Archibald. Athanasiou is this year's Green Jacket Award winner, or if you're a Happy Gilmore fan, Gold Jacket Award winner, with a solid negative 47. Good enough for the title for worst plus-minus player in the league. That is very shocking, and I really hope that that's an indication of Detroit rather than Athanasiou, because the Oilers don't need that kind of negative play on their team. I don't think that would even be possible under Dave Tippett's style, but I'll just leave that there. Athanasiou put up 26 points this year, and he's a pending RFA. He didn't have a great season overall, so I don't think he's going to get too much of a contract upgrade, but we'll mention that later. Riley Shahan is a solid depth center. He's a veteran guy, had lots of playoff experience, played with some big clubs in Pittsburgh and Detroit. So he put up 15 points this year. He's going to be an important guy come playoff time. As for Josh Archibald, he had a big year this year, put up 21 points and 12 goals, added some much-needed secondary scoring. The Oilers obviously need more of that, but it's a good start with what we're seeing from Archibald. And he really broke out this year as the top PK guy, or one of the top PK guys on Edmonton. So he's going to be really important for the rest of the year when the season comes back as well. And jump to the fourth line. We got James the Real Deal Neal, Juju Arcara, and Alex Chiasson. Neal came right out this season and had a great start. He was putting a ton of goals on the board, and then he got injured. And it really slowed down his season, but overall, he had a good one. I mean, coming over from Calgary, he had an awful season last year, but this year he put up 19 goals and 31 points in 55 games, and it's a new beginning for him in Edmonton. He obviously doing way better than Calgary. His contract is still really bad, but it's better than Lucic. I think Edmonton would have Neal any day over Lucic, just the fact of the scoring touch that Neal brings. And so far, they haven't missed Lucic's toughness, so that's a big thing for them. Juju Arcara put up 10 points this year. He's a solid faceoff guy. I think he had like 51% in the faceoff circle, so it's important to have your bottom two centers be good faceoff guys. He plays hard, real gritty guy, so he's a solid fourth line guy come playoff time. As for Alex Chiasson, he had 24 points this year, and it was a bit of a drop off for him. Last year he had career highs in goals and points, but he's still an important guy for this team. He brings that Stanley Cup pedigree from when he won the Cup with the Capitals, and he's a good locker room guy, so it's important for your team to have those guys in order to be successful and really make a run in the playoffs. A guy who was injured this year and is kind of the 13th, 14th forward right now is Joachim Nygaard. He put up 9 points and was really picking up steam before he got injured, so potentially if he's back from his injury when the playoffs start up, he could be some solid depth for them. Another guy who's in that similar role but not injured is Gaetan Haas. He put up 10 points this year, and it was his first year in North America, so he's definitely going to improve and adapt to the North American game, but he came from the Swiss League and was putting up some solid points there, so he could be a player in the NHL, but we'll see. Another guy who is kind of trying to break into the Oilers lineup is Patrick Russell. And he was a point-of-game guy at St. Cloud State in college, and he put up 40 points in the AHL, so he could be a player too, but he hasn't made an impact yet, so we got to wait and see. As I mentioned before, the biggest weakness on this Oilers team is the secondary scoring. They don't have a ton of it. It was a huge improvement for them to bring over Ennis and Athanasiou at the deadline. It really makes their forward group a lot more deep, and that's what they're going to need going forward. They have the best two players in the league, but they don't have nearly the best top two lines in the league. And that says a lot about your team's scoring depth. So in terms of like the top three players on each team, I put Edmonton in like maybe number one in the league. But in terms of the top two forward lines, they probably are middle of the pack. So Holland has a big job this summer in terms of trying to improve that depth and really give Draisaitl and McDavid some more options in terms of setup guys and getting guys some tap-in goals, because you know it's going to happen with those two with the puck all the time. Okay, jump into the Oilers' defense now. Their top line is Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larsson. Klefbom put up 34 points this year, and he's a guy who really needs to stay healthy. He's had pretty well constantly injury issues throughout his career, and he's a great defenseman. He plays upwards of 25 minutes a night against the other team's top players and does very well for himself. And he's got a steal of a contract for Edmonton. He's on $4.1 million for the next like 3 years. So that is a steal for a guy that's playing 25 plus minutes a night for you. His partner, Adam Larson, is a really stay-at-home guy. He just put up 6 points this year. And unfortunately for everybody in Edmonton, he's always going to be remembered as the guy who was traded one for one with Taylor Hall. And that's not going to be a good look on anyone, especially when the guy comes out and wins the Hart Trophy the next year. But Larson is a really good defenseman. Stay at home. You know what you're going to get out of him. So he does have a contract coming up, and he's going to get an upgrade. He's probably going to end up making around $6 billion. I'm sure by then the salary cap will be at a place where Edmonton deems that necessary. But depending on what happens with the rest of the young D core, we'll see if Larson ends up staying around for the next while. Second line of D is Darnell Nurse and Ethan Bear. Nurse put up 33 points this year and got a nice little contract extension for 2 years at $5.6 million per year. That is a really nice contract for the 25-year-old Nurse. He has the franchise player type pedigree to him. He's a potential top-line defenseman, can play those long minutes, the long nights, and I love his game. He's got a ton of toughness and some skill, and he's not afraid to go head-to-head with some of the toughest guys in the league, so you need that kind of player on your defensive core. As for Ethan Bear, he put up 21 points this year, and he was playing at least 20 minutes a night average, and that really shows to me that he's made the jump, and he's ready to be an NHL guy full-time. He plays with a ton of grit and had a solid first scrap of his career with Tkachuk. He did pretty well for himself. Tkachuk got a couple bombs in first, but I think Bear recovered well, and I think he's going to be a really good player for Edmonton going forward. As for the third pair of D, we got Chris Russell and Matt Benning. Some more stay-at-home, solid defensemen. Chris Russell put up 9 points. He is making $4 million a year, which is a little bit too much for a third pair guy, but he is still a solid NHL D, so he's an upcoming free agent next year, so we'll see what happens. He's definitely not going to be back in Edmonton at that number, so unless he takes a little bit of a pay decrease, he might be looking to go elsewhere. As for Matt Benning, he put up 8 points and is a RFA this summer with arbitration rights. Honestly, he's getting passed by some of the younger guys, and he might be in kind of the spot of the seventh D now. I don't see a ton of upside to his game. He's a solid defenseman, for sure, solid defensive defenseman, and a third pairing guy, but I don't know if he's too much more than that. The guy who I kind of see as taking his spot as on the sixth D spot is Caleb Jones. He put up 9 points this year. And he's very young, but he's shown that he's a legit NHL quality defenseman. So it's definitely good that the Oilers have that extra guy and depth going into the playoffs. So we'll see what happens. And another guy who probably won't end up playing much in the playoffs when the season does come back. He ended off the season injured, so he's kind of in that 7th, 8th D spot. And I don't know if he'll be back for the playoffs because of his injury, is Mike Green. If he is back in Edmonton next year, it'll be probably on a veteran minimum. He is still a good power play QB type player, but I don't know if he's going to be good enough defensively for the Dave Tippett defensive scheme. I just think that the Oilers have a lot of young quality defensemen, and yes, they could use the veteran presence that Mike Green will bring, but I just don't know if he's got the quality defensive play that they'd be looking for from a bottom pairing guy, so I don't think he'll be back. In net, the Oilers have Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith. They basically split the games dead even this year and had really solid numbers, both of them. Koskinen was 18 wins, 9.17 save percentage, 2.75 goals against average in 38 games. And Smith was 19 wins, 9.02 save percentage, 2.95 goals against average in 39 games. So, honestly, that is great numbers from both your goalies. And if you're splitting games dead down the middle, that's showing that you got a chance to win every night. And that's all you can really ask for out of your goalies. When Koskinen got that 3-year contract, as Peter Chiarelli was walking out the door of Edmonton, when I saw that, I was like, what the hell is going on in Edmonton? I just don't get it. Why would they let that guy sign that contract as he's getting fired? And the 4.5 average annual value looked pretty bad. But I got to be honest, Koskinen's deserving it for right now anyway. It's not crazy money for a number one goalie. And he's showing, at least with his numbers this year, that he is a number one caliber goalie. He obviously probably took a little bit of time to get used to the North American game, but now that he has, I think he's definitely earning that contract. As for Mike Smith, he had a solid year too. He's a veteran guy. He's really providing that solid veteran presence in net, and the fact that he's splitting the games shows that he's still a really good NHL goalie. And whenever you have a goalie fight planned for your game, you know you got to put Smith in because he's going to beat the shit out of the other goalie. The way he took down Rittich in that game, that was pretty hilarious. He beat the piss out of him. And isn't that what you want out of your goalie? You want him just to be able to beat the crap out of any other team's goalie? That's the real goal. Anyway, that concludes the roster. And now we're going to jump to how the season ended up playing out. The Oilers ended up with 83 points on the season, and they finished 4 ahead of Calgary and 5 ahead of Vancouver, who was in the last wildcard spot. To me, the story of Edmonton's season is really the Battle of Alberta. It is the best rivalry in the game, and it's something that every fan and player and media member in the entire NHL is getting up for that game. Everybody's excited because they know how much is on the line every night. These guys are battling for playoff spots, yes, but also provincial rivalry. They're playing for a lot. They're playing for clout. And the Battle of Alberta really, really says a lot about the Edmonton Oilers season. Just the fact that they play really tough. They score a lot of goals. They are not afraid to fight. They can play whatever game you want to play and have success, and they showed it by where they finished off in the season. So I'm really excited about them going forward into the playoffs, and I think it's an absolutely perfect way to end this season to have the Oilers and the Flames play in the first round when the season starts up again. I mean, a 7-game series of the Battle of Alberta is the best thing for the NHL. There is so many storylines, and it's every game is so exciting. I bet the viewership on those games is going to be through the roof, and the NHL knows that for sure. My prediction for the first round of the playoffs for Edmonton is Oilers are going to win in 7 games. I just think they have way too much talent up front to lose to the Flames, who isn't quite in the same category. Their top guys just can't turn it on with the snap of a finger and go out and put up 4 points a night. So with McDavid and Draisaitl, I think the Oilers could go very far in these playoffs. I don't quite think it's their chance to win. I think teams like the Blues, Colorado, Dallas might just be on that upper tier just above Edmonton. And then there's the teams in the East too, who I think would probably end up beating the Oilers if it came down to them in the Stanley Cup final. So I don't think it's the Oilers' year to win the Cup, but I definitely think they could win a round or two in the playoffs this year. And who knows, with the lockout this year or the quarantine lockout, anybody has a chance to win, as I've mentioned before. Guys are going to be rested weird. Nobody's been on the ice, so hopefully a quick turnaround from camp to playoffs suits the Oilers and their young team very well. This summer, the Oilers have some interesting things to deal with in terms of cap space. Holland's summer plans are going to involve a lot of free agent contract talk. The UFAs coming up this summer are Tyler Ennis, Riley Shahan, Patrick Russell, Mike Smith, and Mike Green. Ennis, I think, will be back maybe around $1 million. Like I said, there's so many points to be had in Edmonton. He'd be silly to not stay here. Riley Shahan probably will come back around the same cap hit he was before, around $1.5 million. But depending on if there's some cap issues, he may not be back. Patrick Russell probably going to get $700K minimum contract, if one at all. Who knows? He's like 25 years old, so it's kind of the make or break time deciding whether he's going to play on an NHL or AHL contract. Mike Smith will be back for sure. He loves the Battle of Alberta way too much to leave now when it's just getting good. He's probably going to be back around $2 million again, and that's a good number to have a solid backup goalie at. As for Mike Green, I mentioned before, I don't think he'll be back just because the unexpected depth that the Oilers now have on the back end. All their young defensemen have really matured quickly, so that just goes to show you how good they're doing in Bakersfield with the defense. So if I was a GM, I'd be looking at the defensive coach in Bakersfield for a potential next head coach job. If I was Mike Green, though, I would want to be back in Edmonton. He's probably on the tail end of his career, and he's made plenty of money. So if I was him, I would want to win a cup, and there isn't too many more opportunities than there would be in Edmonton. So if they want him back, I say he jumps on it and takes the minimum, because you get to play with some of the best players in the world and maybe get some power play opportunity, get to throw some points up on the board. I'm sure Greeny would love it. So as for the RFAs this summer, Andreas Athanasiou, Ethan Bear, and Matt Benning. Athanasiou will probably get $3 million again. He had $3 million last year with Detroit, and he didn't have the best year. I mean, he won that green jacket, so that really doesn't look good on you. And hopefully next year he can have a big year, but I think he gets a one-year deal to come back around what he was paid last year. As for Ethan Bear, I think he's probably going to get around $3 million as well for maybe the next 2 years. And he definitely proved that he deserves it. He's a solid NHL defenseman now, so there's no doubt he's going to get a nice little ticket. As for Matt Benning, he was making just under $2 million. I think he'll end up around $2 million again. He didn't have the greatest season. It was very average, kind of what you'd expect from him. And he's a solid third-line pair guy for now, so I think he'll be back around $2 million. If all those signings I just mentioned happen, that puts Edmonton over the cap by around $1 million. So they could be considering some trades this offseason, so keep an eye out. They might look to trade a guy like Matt Benning after they sign him, or Chris Russell, who's making $4 million and is a third pair guy. And that is just too much money for a third pair defenseman. So I think the GM will be looking for a trade possibly to clear up some cap space. They do have some contracts that are coming up in the next little bit that are going to really stretch what they can do. And with Evan Bouchard coming up, he's most likely going to be on the team next year. So that kind of is taking a spot away from one of the other guys. He's shown a ton of skill and that he can play at the NHL level. There just hasn't really been enough room for him, and it doesn't hurt to allow defensemen a little bit of time to grow. He's only 20 years old, so still lots of time. But Edmonton has a really great young decor, and they have lots of prospects in the system. Philip Broberg is another guy who's on the way, and I'm really excited to see the kind of progress that he's making. He could make the team out of camp next year. I mean, he's still only 18 years old, so he could be a couple years out, but that's another young defenseman who has a lot of upside and will definitely be an NHL player soon. Keep in mind, as I mentioned, they got a couple contracts coming up in the next couple years. Nugent Hopkins is going to be going up from $5 million probably to around $8 million in 2 years. Yamamoto is on his entry-level contract, and next year that'll be up. So he's probably, if he can put up a point a game, he's probably looking around a $5, $6 million contract. So that's exciting for him. And Adam Larson, I mentioned before, probably going to get a $2 million-ish pay bump up to $6 million. And because of these bigger contracts, that means less money to go around for the rest of the roster. And that means roster change up, shaking things up. There's going to be chances for new guys in the organization and new free agents that are getting signed to the roster. These big contract upgrades that guys are getting, that's the kind of shit that makes waves in this league and really creates change, because once a team decides that they're going to pay a player a lot more, that that means there's less money to go around, and there's less money for the third and fourth line forwards and the last pair of D and the backup goalie. And this is where we get new, young, or import players from Europe that are coming in, and they're really getting a shot at taking like a league minimum salary and basically starting their career off of that. So it's exciting to see these guys who have developed into star players get paid, and then because of them getting paid, new guys get opportunity because the league gets shuffled around. There's older guys that might get contracts bought out because they're costing too much, and these new young guys are getting paid, and then other new young guys who haven't made a name for themselves have the opportunity to play for a bigger contract. They get to come in, play with the big club on a league minimum, and they get to really show their stuff. So I'm excited about the change that's continuing to happen in this league, and it's due to these nice big contracts that everybody's getting. So there you go. There's a little piece of enlightenment about the salary cap and implications on how the league changes because of it. And that's kind of quality shit I'm trying to bring you. That concludes the recap of the Edmonton Oilers. And now for the candidate for the best flow in the show contest from the Edmonton Oilers, Mike Smith. And that's not to be confused with Bubbles from the Trailer Park Boys. Smitty always has the flow going on. I've never really seen him with short hair. I mean, there's a couple photos maybe trying to look pretty for picture day, but he almost always has those nice curly locks going, kind of like myself. I don't want to brag, but yeah, and this one was voted on by you fans, so there's no complaints. Mike Smith is the winner. I got to give a shout out to the runners up, Connor McDavid and Tyler Ennis. The photo used for Tyler Ennis was a little bit vintage, but he did have some mega nice flow. So congrats to Mike Smith. And yeah, before I go today, I just want to send my condolences to the family of Colby Cave and the Edmonton Oilers organization. There's been nothing but amazing things said about Colby in the media and from his teammates and fans. He really sounded like a great human. And it's really sad to have lost a member of the hockey community. If you go on the Edmonton Oilers Instagram page, you'll see that the Cave family and the Oilers organization has started a memorial fund for Colby Cave. They're raising money with emphasis on mental health initiatives, and they're also going to give money to underprivileged youth and help them get access to sports. It really is a tragic loss for the hockey community, and it always is when it comes to a young hockey player. So I really just wanted to send my love and prayers out to everyone who's been affected by this tragedy, and especially to the Cave family and the Oilers organization. Thanks for listening, guys. Stay tuned for the Dallas Stars next time.